Golf Smarter number 195 for September 8, 2009.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Golf in the Kingdom with author Michael Murphy.
This is Golf Smarter, sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Welcome and thanks for downloading a new episode of the Golf Smarter podcast. The good news is that if you're hearing this show, it means I'm back from our adventure to Prague. I actually produced this show before I left, knowing I was coming back late on Tuesday just in time to get the show published. You'll get more information about the adventure in the coming weeks, but today I'm excited to share my conversation with Michael Murphy that was recorded a number of months ago. Have you ever read Golf in the Kingdom? If not, let me just tell you that it is the most popular golf novel in history. Not my opinion, just a fact of sales. Among other things, Golf in the Kingdom has spawned the Shivas Iron Society at shivas.org, S-H-I-V-A-S.org. And here's their mission statement. The Shivas Iron Society provides opportunities for community, discovery, and transformation through golf. We are a network of about 1,000 golfers from all walks of life in over a dozen countries. We welcome all who share our love of the game and our respect for its deeper dimensions. Many of the mental coaches we featured on Golf Smarter all have their roots in Golf in the Kingdom. Actually, my introduction and first meeting with Fred Shoemaker was at a Shivas Iron Society event. So Michael Murphy has been on the show before, early in 2006, long time ago, early in the show. But this time I got to sit down with him at a Shivas Iron Society event while the group was out playing night golf at McGinnis Park, my local nine-hole course. Welcome back to the Golf Smarter podcast, Michael.
Good to be here.
It's great to have you on again. This time we get to do it face-to-face. I'm so excited. In your wildest dreams, did you ever think that Golf in the Kingdom would not only have created the buzz that it has over 36 years now, that it would still be talked about 36 years later?
No.
And create a life for you?
No. It was the first book I wrote, and it was the first book I tried to write. I was older, you know, than somebody who's going to give their life to writing. My brother was an extremely gifted novelist, and he started writing in his teens. So I started writing this at 39. It was published when I was 40. So it happened. Norman Mailer used to say that God gives every aspiring writer one free one. That was my free one.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I've written nine books, published nine books, but...
Does that become pressure? That, okay, I got my free one and it worked.
No. It didn't work that way at all. In fact, in the early years, Golf in the Kingdom would sell 4,000 to 6,000 copies.
4,000 to 6,000.
Yeah, 4,000 to 6,000.
Yeah.
And Viking, who published it, subbed it out to Delacorte. It was a Delta book. And financially, they made a mistake doing that because after some years, it started to grow. And when you subbed it out, all they got was a small royalty.
Sure.
And Delta then made the money. The price went up. The sales went up. And so by the somewhere in the 80s, it had gone up to 50,000 a year.
Wow.
By word of mouth. It had never been advertised. I had never gone out on tour. It made it on its own. It created a life. And eventually, Viking let the Delacorte license run out and got it back in the early 90s after 20 years. Mm. And then it went up to 100,000 a year for a while. And now it's back down. But here it is still going 36 years later.
And you know, we were talking earlier before we started recording, and you were asking me about podcasting and how I let people know how the word gets out. And so, again, same to you. How? Why did it get up to 100,000?
Well, there's a lot of reasons, I think. You know, a lot of people said, "My God, I've been having these experiences on golf courses. I have this wonderful enchantment, these mystical occult experiences, and here is a I wasn't alone. And so many books that touch a deep chord do so because they find a secret corner of someone's life and give it meaning and resonance and amplify it. And so this happened, and people started telling me about their mystical and occult experiences on golf courses. And this has been my life work, Esalen Institute, my other books, etc. But this opened a magical window, and first into golf, then into other sports, and then into various human practices and vocations that are not thought to be in any way explicitly spiritual or let alone mystical or occult. So it's led me into the life of surgeons who do these very heavy-duty operations in the brain or the heart. Hmm. And, of course, into musicians. We all know that music is kissing cousin to mystical experience.
But there's sometimes symphony, in music they have something to help push that along.
Well, the density, the intensity, the depth of the experience of certain people. And in classical music, symphony, orchestra, violinists who told me the most extraordinary experiences. So anyway, these supernormal events and powers that occur hidden in plain sight in mainstream culture. Golf in the Kingdom was a tremendous door opener, and still is.
Yeah,
36 years later.
We're here tonight at McGinnis Park Golf Course, nine-hole course, because the Shivas Iron Society got together to have a nighttime golf event. They're out playing golf right now. You and I stayed back. But here's an organization that was started based on the book, based on the love of this book, based on the characters. And again,
Well, they have members in all 50 states.
Yeah.
In 25 countries. It's been going now for 16 years. I never thought it would last. Steve Cohen's brainchild, you know. Yeah.
But when you close the door at night, do you sit there and laugh going, I can't believe, what are these people doing? I mean, do you find it humorous or flattering?
Well, it's at times it's hilarious.
How does it strike you?
At times it's hilarious. And it's so endearing. It's so easy to belittle somebody who's had this remarkable experience. But when you listen to it, it's so deep.
Yeah.
It is so life-giving for people. And it's such a gift to be able to have written a book that does this. Now I've written other books, and they've had their life. But none of them, my first child, you know, Golf in the Kingdom, has had this effect. I still marvel at it. And now, you know, if this movie does in fact get made, because we're right on the verge of it.
Yeah, I want to talk more about that too.
Yeah, then who knows? You know, I keep my fingers crossed. You never know whether a movie is going to really have the magic.
And you never know even if it's going to be made, because you've been talking about this now, because I'm sure that people have approached you for decades about
36 years. The first year it was out, somebody wanted to do it.
Yeah, so people have approached you. Some big name people have approached you the year it was the book came out.
Well, Warner Brothers had it for 10 years for Clint Eastwood, and he finally couldn't find a way, to his satisfaction, to make it. And as he's become a greater and ever greater film director, and his obviously got tons of integrity about this, but it just wasn't his to do. And so we've got it back, and now I'm ending up with Mindy Affram owning it, and with Susan Streitfeld having written the screenplay. She's the lead writer on it. So I get to have the fun of making a feature film out of the book I wrote.
And so, you know, there, I guess I've once asked an instructor, are there people who shouldn't be playing golf? Are there books that shouldn't be made into a movie? I mean, is
that's
it that
way? That's a damn good question. And I would say absolutely yes. But people will try. I mean, if people love a book, they're going to try.
You're sitting back here and laughing. It's like, yeah, okay, they will go try. For it.
And I just surrendered to this now. And these two gals, Mindy Afram and Susan Streitfeld, are so dedicated. And for year after year. I just look at them with amazement and surrender to their leadership.
Yeah. Yeah. You say that people come to you all the time that have stories, their own mystical stories of things on a golf course.
It's constant.
And they need to bleed to you. They need to tell you, oh my gosh, I'm meeting you. And you wrote the consummate book, which is now the best-selling fiction book in the history about golf.
Yeah.
And you just, are, you know, you can't discount what they're saying. It happened to them.
Well,
they,
you know,
believe it.
Fred, it's part of my life as a whole. I mean, I gave myself to this whole venture when I was 20 years old. I started the Esalen Institute 46 years ago. Mm. You know, 10 years before I sat down and wrote Golf in the Kingdom. And now, Esalen Institute, 10,000 people a year come there, and it's had a huge ripple effect, you know, for personal development, self-inquiry, broadening one's horizons, all the stuff that's gone through there. And then my other projects, which have to do with more hard research on the supernormal capacities of human beings, some of it scholarly, some of it experimental in labs and so forth that we've supported, you know, this going on half a century. So all of that is in parallel or to my Golf in the Kingdom life, which has its own, you know, its own vitality.
You get
but they're interrelated.
Bring it up.
They're interrelated.
Sure.
It's the same topic, but it's I can't tell you how extraordinarily amusing it is that all these experiences are happening on golf courses.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. A lady that tells me,
share if you can share some with
well,
us.
Well,
like,
walking
give me an
up
idea.
The 18th hole at sunset in this beautiful country club of hers, and she, on the green, the sun set completely, and suddenly it was rising from under the ground.
It.
The sun. Mm-hmm. After sunset. And she went into the lovely clubhouse. And the sun was shining through the walls, and it shone through every wall for 3 days afterwards.
Wow.
This, she lived in a state of grace. She reminded me for all the world of Jakob Berma, the great Protestant, you know, late 16th, early 17th century mystic, who had an illumination triggered by the pewter bowl. He was a shoemaker, and to burn the leather, they use the rays of the sunlight off a pewter bowl or some other reflecting surface and would burn with it into the leather. He was a master of this. And one day he went out and this light was everywhere. Now, you know, a reductionist scientist could say, well, he just had a retinal, you know, after image or even a lesion. But no, this stayed with him all his life. And blossomed into a great, enduring mystical realization, and into a kind of mystical philosophy that had huge repercussions in Europe and in the Protestant tradition. I mean, Jakob Berma influenced Hegel, influenced so many of our great thinkers. His work has found its way into Shakespeare. It's everywhere. I remembered all this when I listened to this woman tell me her experience. Because she'd been triggered, I mean, going up that 18th hole, you know, with the sun, but it was much more than a physical thing.
Sure.
Something in her being was ready for this enormous disclosure. Hmm. That the divine is shining through everything in a way filled with energy and with light and with bliss.
Hmm.
But then, as is typical with these spontaneous experiences, it faded away. Because unless it's rooted in a formal practice, it will not endure. Now, golfers are out there playing. They don't think of this as a mystical exercise. They don't think of it as a yogic practice. They don't think of it as some Christian discipline. No, they're playing a game. They're having fun. But there's a lot in the game that has a quasi-transformative practice element. The fact that you have to stay focused and you have to endure one failure after another and bounce back. The fact that you limit the field of your perception, it makes it a kind of limited sensory deprivation. You know, so it has a yogic quality to it, the game. But it's not, it's all in the spirit of play. So willy-nilly, it evokes these experiences. Golf has a peculiar genius to evoke our latent supernature, our secret divinity.
Yeah. You know, there's, I'm not sure if you're familiar with Facebook, which is an internet phenomenon, and you create groups on it. We have a Golf Smarter group, and Shiva Siren Society has a group on Facebook. And I recently joined the Shiva Siren Society group on Facebook, and somebody from the Golf Smarter group wrote to me saying, "Hey, I noticed that you joined the Shiva Siren Society." Mm-hmm. He said, I got to tell you, I read Golf in the Kingdom. I don't get it. What am I missing? You know, he even said, you know, "Emperor wear no clothes here." I just don't see what everyone's so excited about. I'm sure you've had people come to you saying,
"Well, absolutely,
what's going on here?"
Look,
and
I mean,
what are you
anything.
About?
I mean,
how do you address that?
Well, it's you know, there
thanks
can be,
for buying the book. See you later.
Well, I mean, you know, let's say all these gorgeous gals are walking down the street, and one guy will say, "Wow, this one," you know, our taste is different. Resonance is different. We all have different affinities. It ain't for everybody. But what's remarkable to me is how enduring it is.
Right.
And in different
cultures. And it's touched so many people in so many different ways.
Germany,
I'm sure you
in
never
Japan,
had
Japan. I mean, it just...
How many languages has the book been translated to?
11.
Wow. And people are getting it in every language.
Well, apparently, I get
They're
royalties.
Yes.
You know, I mean, they buy it in Danish or German. It's been three different German editions, two Japanese editions, French. I mean, and these are countries. I mean, well, you know, the French language I do not associate with golf. But, of course, Germany is and Japan.
Yeah.
It was translated into Czech. You know, Czechoslovakian. Who knows?
Right.
Yeah, but it's obviously not for everybody.
And when they approach you on that, you just say, "Oh, well, I'm sorry that you didn't." I mean,
I don't feel sorry. I just feel glad that the people who do like it.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, people don't approach you. I mean, I can't remember anybody approaching me and says, "I don't get your book, Golf in the Kingdom." I never get that. I just get the, you know.
I guess they don't want to approach you at that point, yeah.
Well, it's not that important, I mean, to them. I mean, so what?
But there are people that it's so important. It really resonates so deeply.
Their Bible, I mean, they keep it by their bed.
Wow.
They say it's the most important book of their life. I mean, you know, I get this stuff. And authors who are as fortunate as I am to write a book that lasts and hits people so deep, It's incredible.
And you don't mind being your legacy? Is it your legacy?
It's one legacy. I mean, you know, Esalen Institute is probably more famous, and it's a bigger legacy. And then Future of the Body, you know, my book, and then the Integral Transformative Practices groups all over the place now. So that would be another legacy. No, I wouldn't say Golf in the Kingdom is my main legacy. No. Mm. No.
But it's the one they're trying to make a movie about. Let's talk more about the movie. Can we talk about the movie? Is that okay?
Sure.
Now you're feeling a little, we talked a couple of years ago and you were hoping and talking that, you know, they've talked about making this movie for years. But speaking tonight, you sound a little more positive about the fact that this movie's going to be made.
Well, I mean, they have it cast. We have a screenplay. We have a director, a cinematographer, Industrial Light and Magic. Roger Guyette from there is going to work on it. Abandoned Dunes.
You've got a location.
You got money in the
bank. You like the idea of that location?
Oh, it's fantastic.
Perfect, huh?
Fantastic. But, you know, I have come up with some ideas for special effects, which have never been done. I do think we can experiment with an experience that would evoke a recognition in a lot of moviegoers of a dimension of experience that pushes up against the edge of big-time enlightenment in the Buddhist sense. You know, I think all humans have these tiny mystical experiences, but the secret is a practice which dilates it into this permanent ecstasy, knowing where we came from, what it's all about, Alfie. That's what this book's about. This is why we're here. We're here to enjoy Lord's paradise and make a paradise out of this planet. Yes, we have to work hard to improve, you know, the problems, and we've got a lot of them. But at the same time, every one of us can find ways in a busy day to remember where we came from, straight out of the divine being. That's why we're here. And that's what the book's about. As I say, we have to bring being into higher definition. Yeah. America is so go, go, go. It's all becoming. So being and becoming. Go back to Plato.
We're not human beings. We're human doings.
Very good. I never heard that one. Oh. Hey, thank you. We're human doings.
Did you make that up? No, I've heard it before, but I've been accused of that many times.
We're not enough human beings. Thank you for that. Exactly right. We have to bring being into higher definition every day. And golf does it for a lot of people. I mean,
golf definitely does that for a lot of people. And movies do that for a lot of people. So, I mean,
well, movies
and books do that for a lot of people, clearly. I mean,
well, certain
obviously.
Movies and certain books.
Right.
And certain rounds of golf.
And certain rare rounds of golf. Don't go looking for it because you'll never find it.
Golf is so innocent an experience. If we could just, these are the world's biggest gardens. Hmm.
Nature on a leash.
20-some thousand. Nature on a leash? That's a good phrase.
Alan King said that in the movie Garden State. Movie opens up. The shot pans all over the fairway, looking around, comes around, and there's Alan King looking up, and he goes, ah, golf courses. Nature on a leash.
And this was apropos of what? What was that film?
The movie was called Garden State. It had nothing to do with
Garden
golf.
Garden State.
Yeah, had nothing to do with golf. But it was
That's
just
a great
opening
line.
I love that line.
What is it? Nature on a leash.
Nature on a leash.
Well, I mean the care, yeah, the contours, the thought, the knowledge, the lore of these golf course architects. It's a great thing. It really is. So you get to walk around on that. Forget the golf. Just walk around on a golf course. But the thing about golf is that you make your body. So the body, then it's an asana, a pranayama, a mudra all at once. It's an incredible complex movement. It's a half a whirling dervish movement.
You have to enlighten us on those words you just used, because not everyone's going to know what you're talking about.
Well, yeah, these are the technical terms of practice in Hindu-Buddhist practice. An asana is a posture. A pranayama is the way you breathe. A mudra is the governing symbol of your actions. So the golf,
all elements that are really important to golf, too.
Right.
And breathing.
So anyway, everybody willy-nilly becomes a very unusual type of yogi out on a golf course, but that's the last thing on anybody's mind, obviously. It's a strange ritual. You're out there 4 hours, and you of that time, you've spent 10 minutes swinging. Swing takes about 3 or 4 seconds.
At best.
And let's say and don't count the putts, you know, but although the putting and chipping can be a hypnotic, transfixing, semi-luminous moment when if you really get into visualizing where the shot has to go and what it has to do. And once you morph into that shot itself, when Tiger morphs, like, you know, he sinks these incredible shots at times, you know, it defies the odds by such an astronomical orders of magnitude. It's when he's morphed into a supernormal state. This is what I study. You know, this is what my books are. This is what all my books are about. And slowly but surely, the human race is sneaking up on the secret of our being. It really is. We're sneaking up on it. But
well, the quest for being in
the
zone.
The opinion elites will be the last to go. You know, we're sneaking up on the bastions of ignorance that, you know, are based in New York and, you know, the great media empires and then the opinion setters. So slowly the human race is coming up. It's like a slowly rising tide of recognition. You know, I've been watching this now for so long. I mean, 58 years. I could take you by the hand and lead you to a seashore and watch this rising tide of recognition. It's happening all over the place in strange ways. And it's not reflected in our leading opinion elites at all. It really isn't.
Well, there may be a change going on there, too.
Well, I don't see it yet.
Yeah. But I want to bring it to golf I want to bring it back to golf, if you don't mind, but talking about putting. So often on this program, when I'm having conversations with professionals and experts, teachers, it's all about being in the moment. So critical to all of it, and not worrying about.
That whole thing codifies being.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in the moment, no past, present, future, you finally can absorb. You know, one of the worst afflictions in front of America now is obsessive compulsive disorder. It's the scariest of all afflictions. You know if someone's depressed or if someone has a rage problem or if someone is overcome by grief. But obsessive compulsive disorder is always under the guise of getting the job done, of pursuing those interests which must be pursued. It's prevalent among accountants and lawyers, among busy people, among an over-multitasking mother who's this one and this one and this one. And then what happens is that the brain, it's like a great flywheel of momentum. It can't stop this obsession. So then people sleep less, and they get a sleep disorder. So they then can take an Ambien, they can take a pill, but then they compensate in the morning with a coffee, which reinforces this thing. So what we have is an obsessive compulsive culture getting more and more and more. So the stock market now, traders, you know, there's no investors. It's trading fast money on CNBC. That's the thing. This is obsessive compulsive disorder. It's the great plague of our time. I think it's worse than AIDS. And it's got people. And, they can laugh and joke, and they're caught with it. And they don't even know they're caught in this affliction. So there's no being there. It's a kind of a metastasis. It's a cancer of becoming. This thing has gotten away from us. So this is a culture in peril with this. And to surrender back into being, it's very hard. It's very hard. But golf is one amazing activity that people get away and they go the golf course at least. Well, the problem is many of them bring that same OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, into golf. So, oh my God, they got every golf score, they got everything, and they bring the sickness. But an awful lot of people somehow seem to find a beatitude out there, and that's why they have these experiences, and that's why I get to hear about all their marvelous denouement there.
I was recently asked, how is it that you get a chance to relax? What do you do to relax? And I said, take me out to the golf course. It gives me a number of hours to do it, and I can just slow down and take a walk.
Thank God for golf. And, yeah. Thank God for Ike Eisenhower. He used to play golf. I loved it that he did, you know. Jack Kennedy played. Bill Clinton played. Barack does his basketball. He's going to build a basketball court. In the way, and there's a guy who really knows. He's a workout freak, apparently, from what you read. I don't know anyone even close to him, but he's that obsessive compulsive disorder. is where the devil lives today.
Mm.
The devil has decided to take that, and our financial markets, you know, these puts and calls and options and hedge funds and derivatives and, I mean, go, 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 go. It never stops. This one on this one on this one. It's a plague.
Yeah.
It's a monstrosity, actually. And we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Well, Golf in the Kingdom, the greatest selling golf novel in history. It's available on our Smarter Shopping page if you've not read it. And you know, if you're listening to this podcast, you appreciate many things about golf, and you definitely should look into have it should be in your library. I mean, it should be in your library, and open it up. Don't go looking for golf instruction when you look at this book, but definitely go in with an open mind, because it could open your mind even more. And it's just such a great honor to be able to talk to you about it, Michael, and really appreciate you coming back on the show. Thanks
Fantastic.
So much.
Fantastic. To be continued.
What a great line to end the conversation with. So open. It's classic Michael Murphy, isn't it? To be continued. Golf in the Kingdom is available at our Golfers Mart as the books from every author ever featured on this podcast. Just go to golfsmarter.com and click on the Golfers Mart and find the books, training aids, balls, and if you're not a member, you can even purchase past episodes of Golf Smarter. You know, the movie is in production and was shot at Bandon Dunes earlier this year. There are links on our blog about this show that will take you to the movie website, findshivas.com. How about Playing with the Pros? Have you ever watched that on the Golf Channel? If you're a Golf Channel watcher, I'm sure you've seen the show Playing with the Pros. But how about doing it? Have you ever had a lesson on the course? Would you like one? Well, then you have to come to our President's Cup party on October 12th because Adam Eisner, the head teaching professional at Peacock Gap, is now one of our prizes for those of you who sign up to play. That's right. Three winners will have Adam in their foursome to get advice, tips, and insights while you're playing your round. Because this isn't a competition, you don't have to worry about your score. So why not improve your game instead of fretting over each shot? What a great opportunity. So Adam's going to be one of the players with us, one of the prizes for you. The other pro you could have in your foursome, one of the great club makers of our generation, Jesse Ortiz.
Hi, this is Jesse Ortiz of the Bobby Jones Golf Company, inviting you to sign up at golfsmarter.com to join me in a round of golf on Monday, October 12th, Columbus Day, the day after the President's Cup at Harding Park, for a round of golf at Peacock Gap in Marin County. We're going to have product demonstrations out there at the driving range. You can hit the entire family of Bobby Jones Golf products. And three lucky winners are going to have a chance to play with me. There'll be a barbecue and a recording session of Golf Smarter podcast after the round of golf. There'll also be audience Q&A, and I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have about the industry, club design, or just golf in general. Space is limited, so make sure you sign up early at golfsmarter.com.
Okay, it's getting to crunch time, so you better make a decision and decide you're going to play with us. Look, if you're going to the President's Cup, you're going to be in San Francisco, or you live in the Bay Area, or you live a couple of hours away, it's going to be worth it. We're going to have so much fun. We're going to play golf. We're going to have the driving range open for you so that you can check out the Bobby Jones Golf Clubs. We're also going to have a barbecue, and then we're going to do a recording session with Jesse. And you get to ask the questions this time. Well, we'll both ask questions. I can't help myself. I keep asking questions. It's the Barbecue Pars and Podcast event on Monday, October 12th, Columbus Day. It's a holiday in Marin County, California. So please sign up today. Space is limited for players, but the barbecue, Bobby Jones demo, and recording session are going to be open to the public. But if you do sign up to play with us, you're going to get reserved seats right up front to ask Jesse those questions. So I really hope you can join us. We close with a quote submitted by Ken Kishihara of Fresno, California. Hey, Ken, you really did send me this a long time ago, and I hold on to it because I liked it. I knew I was going to use it. Anyone who says that they play better at 55 than they did when they were 25,
wasn't very good at 25. If you have any questions, comments, requests, or quotes, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.